Welcome into the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a Friday night 1 hour show. We're going to have BNS, Ben Nicholson Smith, join us from the ballpark ahead of Jays and Cardinals and Bukla. Books. Coming on a Friday the 13th is fitting, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Books.
Now that we're thinking about it.
I just caught my reflection and I realized that I kind of look like Freddy Krueger.
Do you?
With the striped
shirt. Did Freddy Krueger wear the green and...
I think there's some green in the stripe, but it's it might be red and green.
Okay, so
now
I'm not quite there.
Never going to wear this again.
Also,
Friday the 13th.
Now that we've got the sweater out of the way, news on the Northern Super League with Diana Matheson to close the show, but very excited about Jason Bukla in particular because I'm looking at the Calder class. Lots of rookies I know. Not one that stands out necessarily in terms of who might win the Calder Trophy. So we're going to get the skinny on all things rookies in the NHL. I'm calling it like the start of our NHL preview. We're almost there. We're what? Less than a week away from training camp starting?
Well, there's going to be some games this weekend for some of the young pups.
Yes, prospect action. I guess we might see some of these guys in action. But hockey season is right around the corner. So I think we should start the previewing today. And we'll do so with Jason Bukla.
And you love a futures bet. So
yes,
we will give you some for the Calder.
Mm.
Do you believe in Friday the 13th?
What do you mean? Like it existing as a day?
I understand it's a real day, but is there anything about it?
No, I don't really subscribe to the theory that bad things are supposed to happen on Friday the 13th. Is that I have a birthday on the 13th. So sometimes it is Friday the 13th.
You and my brother both have a Friday
the 13th. And I've
never
really had anything bad happen, at least on the Friday the 13th birthdays. So do you believe
in it? No, I don't really know. I don't know the origins.
You're more into these things than I am.
Like, I just thought it was a good discussion point when we bring in BNS. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the scariest development for the Blue Jays? Like, you can
I think that's a great
use
question
use it as an in
yeah.
to have discussions. But what is the scariest thing that could happen to the Blue Jays for the rest of the series?
That's tough because a lot of scary things have happened.
Bo comes back and looks brutal. Bo comes back and looks amazing.
I think it would be like a little elbow injury, like a little tightness in the elbow for someone right at the end of the year when it doesn't need to happen. I mean, Tyler Glasnow just apparently had a little incident with the elbow, and the Dodgers are, of course, gearing up for something that the Blue Jays aren't participating in this year, which is the playoffs. A little news on an elbow not feeling right. I think that's probably the scariest storyline for a Blue Jays team right now.
Yeah, this scary opponent against the Cardinals, I guess, tonight on a Friday night.
I wouldn't say they're the scariest.
Third in the National League, 74-72 record. The Blue Jays are still 69-78, so it's definitely a winnable one. We got Gausman on the mound, and it's a game that these Blue Jays can certainly win at Friday night at home. Gausman, I mean, I don't know if he's still the ace. I think they've kind of shared that title this year between him, Berríos.
Yeah.
I guess the two of them, not really.
Yeah.
Bowden Francis.
Bowden Francis definitely acting like
ace.
It of late. That's maybe, a big problem with the Blue Jays season is that there wasn't like an ace who did ace things, right? Kevin Gausman enters the season dealing with an injury and not really getting the spring training behind him and not really feeling like Kevin Gausman to start the year. Berríos did start well, has not pitched well of late. Bassett's not really the ace caliber guy. That the Blue Jays have had many problems, but among them has been the lack of ace production. Although, as we mentioned, Bowden Francis has looked like one last couple weeks.
Okay, we're just waiting to get BNS on from the ballpark. We mentioned it. We're going to talk to Jason Bukla as well. We're going to tee up our best bets for this evening, as well as look ahead at the Calder Trophy. It's UFC 306 tomorrow as well, which is going to be a big one. It's going to be at the Sphere, which I'm so excited for. I saw that Austin Matthews was at the Sphere, like, doing some updates with us. There's some good stuff on Sportsnet as well, but he's going to be in attendance because obviously he's a big fighting fan, and it's a Mexican Heritage weekend as well. And there's a new 32 Thoughts where Elliot and Kyle talked to a couple of big names, including Sidney Crosby. So we did get a little bit of an update from those guys. And sounds like Sid is wanting to sign. So our whole discussion we had last week about maybe Sid goes elsewhere doesn't really sound like it.
Yeah, at least for now. I don't know if there was and everyone should go listen to 32 Thoughts, of course, to get the full scoop from Sidney Crosby. But didn't feel like it was oh, no, lifetime, forever. Mm. Pittsburgh Penguins. It's like, no, I'm going to get a contract done. So what does the contract look like? Maybe we can still reserve judgment. If he just signs a two-year deal, maybe he's leaving room at the end of his career potentially to chase a cup if things don't change in Pittsburgh. So I'm gonna hold out hope for a little while longer.
Okay, ahead of tonight's game, it is Ben Nicholson-Smith joining us from the radio broadcast booth at the Rogers Center. BNS, how's it going?
It's going great. Good to be talking to you both. How's it going?
It's Friday the 13th. Do you believe in spooky things?
I believe in spooky things for sure. I would not say I'm the most superstitious person who's out there, but I do, you know what? Like, I actually think that crossing paths with a black cat is good luck. That's maybe my one main superstition.
Okay. I could see you being a cat guy.
That's your one main? That's a really specific main superstition.
Yeah. I like I said, I'm not that superstitious, so but that is the one.
Okay, so Friday the 13th, it allows me to ask, well, what's the scariest development that has happened or could happen for the Blue Jays with the remaining couple weeks going into the offseason? Maybe it's the offseason itself being a scary thing looming for the Blue Jays.
Hopefully the offseason's not as scary as this season has been. Otherwise, we're in for a bit of a ride with this team. But, yeah, I think that the scariest outcome for the Jays right now would simply be an injury to one of their key players, and that's a risk anytime that they take the field. You know, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Jose Berríos, Kevin Gausman, these guys are so important to what the Jays are trying to do next year and beyond, and so you need health first and foremost. Bo Bichette, of course, as he tries to come back. So that is, to me, the scariest possibility. That's what the Jays have to guard against, and they'll do that, and there's an inherent risk to playing, and so you have to accept that and you know, understand that that's part of what comes with playing Major League Baseball. But that, to me, would be the scariest.
I'm not sure what the exact opposite of scary is, maybe welcoming. So I guess the most comforting story has been Bowden Francis' emergence over the last couple starts. It's been unbelievable, and I think it's been game-changing in some ways for this organization as it charts the path forward. It's interesting because, you know, the last couple seasons for the Blue Jays have ended so abruptly, so emotionally, like it's been really, really tough in the moments that the season has ended. I mean, it's kind of been dragging on here, of course, because the season ended long ago, but at least it allows some clarity and gaining more information. And they're definitely gaining information on Bowden Francis and most specifically their starting rotation for next year. This emergence, this run from Bowden Francis, how do you think it changes the calculus from a team building standpoint this offseason?
Yeah, I agree with all of that, and including the part about how they're just sputtering to the finish right now, and in a way that is more painful because May and June were pretty rough for the Jays and for their fans. July, April, there's a lot of, you know, it was a tough season, really. But it is different than kind of having that really, really difficult ending that they had in 21, 2, and 3. So now everyone is prepared for the end of this season. But Bowden Francis, to your other point, has been incredible. And I think that as the Jays plan ahead, you always want to have more rotation depth. You never want to get complacent when it comes to a starting rotation because injuries can come up at any time, especially when you have veteran pitchers. And, you know, the Jays need to continue adding starting pitching. But in my opinion, Bowden Francis looks like a reliable starting pitcher, someone that you can put into the starting rotation next year, who can induce weak contact consistently. And I think if he's your number four starter, you're in a great spot for 2025.
What were your expectations from Bowden Francis like in April? Because I'm trying to remember how we discussed him and the fallout that he kind of had those first couple starts and he moved around a little bit. But was there ever a world where this was the Bowden Francis? I mean, maybe not this Bowden Francis, but a level close to this Bowden Francis that you had projected when you were doing your preseason look ahead?
Yeah, in spring, I was pretty high on Bowden Francis. I wrote about him a lot in my mind, and according to the people that I was speaking to at spring training, he was ready for the challenge of being a major league starting pitcher. Now, that usually comes with developmental hurdles and slow periods, and it's not usually as exceptional as he's been for the last six or seven starts. But I thought he had a chance to hold his own as a back-end major league starting pitcher. But this was also before he had introduced the splitter, and that splitter has changed things for him. It's allowed him to miss the barrel more often and to get great results on fly balls in play, weak contact, on a consistent basis. So now I would say clearly there's more optimism than there was early in the season, even though I was actually sort of high on him at that time.
We're chatting with Ben Nicholson-Smith from the ballpark ahead of the Cardinals and Blue Jays tonight on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You mentioned sputtering. That is, in fact, the case. But as we watch the final couple weeks of the season here, what is important to you? Like, what are the things that are going to get you moving closer to the edge of your seat in terms of the action on the field?
Yeah, I do think that Bowden Francis is toward the top of that list to see if he can keep building on what he's been doing. Uriel Rodriguez, too, he's trying to get to the point that Bowden Francis is, where you look at him and you say, all right, this is a real, consistent major league starting pitcher, even if it's not an ace. And I don't think anyone should expect Bowden Francis to be a frontline starting pitcher. But if he can hold his own and be a number three or number four or number five starting pitcher, that's super, super valuable. So the rotation is one. The bullpen, I would like to say the bullpen, except for it's been such a disappointment all season long that they're going to have to do an overhaul here. And so I'm just not sure that looking at this group, it's necessarily going to resemble the group in 2025. I mean, it probably shouldn't. It probably should look a lot different if they're going to be serious about contending next year. So that kind of limits the extent of what we're going to take away from this group. But anytime Vlad, Kirk, Varsho, these core players, when they come up and take their chances, we have a chance to learn a little bit about what the offseason can look like and then what the team can look like going into 25.
Yeah, I think looking at this offseason and the checklist, the very long checklist and difficult checklist that the Blue Jays need to accomplish, do you think it's fair to say that it's the most impactful offseason in franchise history coming up for the Blue Jays?
Well, it's a big one. They've had obviously some huge off seasons before, like trading and acquiring Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter. I mean, that's going to be tough to top. Even the off season leading into 2015, where they go out and they get Russell Martin on a free agent deal and they trade for Josh Donaldson as an MVP. I mean, they've had some great off seasons in franchise history. More recently, they signed Robbie Ray on a 1-year deal. They signed Marcus Semien on a 1-year deal. Ray wins the Cy Young. Semien hits 40-plus home runs, setting a record for second baseman. So the bar is pretty high when you're talking about what has happened in the course of this franchise. And they've also had their bad off seasons, right? Like, no one's going to look back fondly on the Kevin Kiermaier, Chad Green, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa off season of 2023. They're just not. And so they need to do better this year. I definitely think it's a pivotal off season. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's like the number one, but it's up there for sure.
Who's the single most impactful addition they can make if you're looking at the free agent class? I mean, nothing's guaranteed. There are lots of needs for this group. But if you're like, hey, we can get this one, who is it for you?
I mean, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, right? But, I mean, clearly the best player out there is Juan Soto. And, the Jays.
I guess I should have put the caveat that, like, semi-realistic.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they went after Shohei Ohtani. We'll see what happens with Juan Soto. I'm sure there are a lot of Jays fans out there saying that, they're just going to be used or burned or whatever. We'll see. Juan Soto is a really good player, and he's about to be a free agent. I'm not holding my breath, but that's something the Blue Jays will certainly explore. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you have, Alex Bregman's out there. Anthony Santander is out there. Willy Adames is a really good player. There's some good pitchers out there too, although the Jays probably, more likely to get in the depth tier when it comes to starting pitching. But there's also a chance that this could be the year. I don't know if they're going to do it, but if there's ever a year to spend big on relievers, then this might be it, because they need to improve the bullpen. They don't have clear answers in the farm system, and there are some pretty good relievers out there, whether it's Carlos Estevez, Clay Holmes, someone like Tanner Scott. There actually is some depth to that free agent relief class if the Jays wanted to break from their own precedent and be more aggressive there.
Might be an expensive offseason, but maybe worth every penny. I saw Francisco Lindor was speaking about one of the newest and youngest Blue Jays, Arjun Namala, and said, quote, "I see him becoming one of the faces of the franchise for sure." So they've spent some time training in the past. Like, what does that mean to have somebody of that caliber saying something like that to a young prospect who we have seen lighting it up in the minor leagues? But the timeline, the excitement around someone like Arjun Namala, and to hear that from someone like Francisco Lindor.
Yeah, really cool comments to hear that kind of support from Francisco Lindor, who's obviously, just one of the best. So great article by David Singh there. But when it comes to Namala, he's putting on a really, really impressive performance in a ball to be able to do that. As I want to say, he's 18. You might have the numbers in front of you, but I you know, he's a very, very young player, younger than a lot of players who were drafted this year. And he's putting up great numbers. So that's all you can hope for from a young position player. And I'm really intrigued to see where this goes for him.
Okay, Ben, you're going to be covering, I imagine, some meaningful baseball soon with the playoffs just around the corner here. The extent to which, you know, you're covering those teams, I guess you can let us know. But you've seen pretty much every team, I suppose, that's going to be competing in the playoffs this year so far in real life. What team have you seen this year that checks off all the boxes for you when it comes to a World Series contender?
Yeah, it's interesting because there's no, like, powerhouse team in the same way that some years we've seen teams win like 106, 108 games. Just hasn't been the case this year for whatever reason. I still think the Yankees and Dodgers, though, are pretty scary. And I know the Yankees have their bullpen issues right now with Clay Holmes being demoted out of the closer spot. But I think between Cousins and the way Luke Weaver's throwing the ball right now, I think Holmes can bounce back. They have Marcus Stroman in the bullpen. I just think the Yankees can do some things pitching-wise to allow the likes of Judge and Soto to stand out. And on the National League side, I just have to look at the Dodgers because Ohtani's the best player in the game, you know, in my opinion. And my thoughts don't count on this because I don't have any National League votes. But to me, he is the MVP over Lindor this year at this point with a couple weeks left to play. Just an absolutely unbelievable player who can impact every single game that he's in. You put him alongside Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. The Dodgers clearly not fully healthy on the pitching side, but I think that if you give them that lineup and Dave Roberts, his experience, his expertise late in games, I just think the Dodgers are the team to beat in the National League, even though the teams like the Phillies are pretty good and the Padres are kind of scary. So Yankees and Dodgers are the ones that I have my eyes on the most closely.
So that's interesting. I mean, you circle the best hitters in baseball. And if we're talking about the Blue Jays offseason, I mean, yeah, okay, Juan Soto. But, like, clearly that is important to you. Some people will look at it like, yeah, who's got the best starting pitching? Who's got the most dominant number one and number two starters? That's who I'm going to back in the playoffs. But for you, it is the middle of the order. Is that instructive to you in terms of the Blue Jays and what they have to do? Can they get by with their pitching staff and just go all in on offense? Clearly it's what they're missing this year. But if you like the Dodgers and Yankees, I mean, in some ways, the Blue Jays are so far from that, right? And that's what they got to prioritize. I know that, but, like, could the Blue Jays go the way of, you know, the Royals, who have good pitching, have a superstar player, obviously, but maybe leaning on starting pitching to try and upset the likes of Aaron Judge and Juan Soto?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I think that the Jays have a couple ways they can attack this, and ideally they would dip into multiple buckets here. They do need another bat, clearly. If you're trying to get through the playoffs, you need guys who can hit home runs because you're facing better pitching. It's harder to string together three or four singles in a row, so you need guys who can hit it out of the park, and Vladdy's one. But I don't know who that other hitter on the Jays is. So going out to get that player in free agency, I think, would be huge for them. And then it's also relief pitching because, you know, if you're playing in a wild card series or if you're trying to get in on the final day of the season, you need five or six outs. We saw this in 22 when they blew a 6-run lead, right, to the Mariners. Or we saw this in 21 when they lost some games early in the season and they weren't able to get into the playoffs despite a really great offense. So if you have a bullpen that can lock down those leads, you're in the division series, you're trying to clinch a game five, you have to hand it over to someone for five outs, I don't know who on this team you would give that to right now. So to me, the bullpen is a clear hole on this team as well.
All right, Ben, we're looking forward to hearing you on the call for Sports at 590 The Fan. We appreciate you joining us, and don't walk under any ladders, but you can say hello to Black Cats.
Thanks so much. Okay,
thanks,
have a
Ben.
Good one.
Ben Nicholson-Smith with Sportsnet and At the Letters podcast.
I'd rather see a ladder than a cat. As a dog guy, the stray black cat just roaming around, like, I'm not going near it, are you?
It's a little spooky.
Give me the ladder.
Yeah, it's a bit spooky. Okay, let's do our best bets for tonight, and then we'll do some Calder chat.
Sure.
I'll get that just because mine has to do with tonight's game, so we might as well while we're on the topic. So best bet for tonight, we got Blue Jays and Cardinals starting a three-game set here. I looked for something Friday the 13th-ish, and so Spencer Horwitz has 12 home runs. It's a good bet,
I
okay?
I love it.
This would be his 13th home run of the season.
On Friday
plus
the 13th.
800.
You can tell what dominated our pre-show
we talked a lot about
discourse
about Friday the 13th. So it'll be his 13th home run, and I mean he hits the ball out of the park. So why not?
Yeah, I guess he would do it for the 13th time this year. Yeah, a 3-game set. Cardinals, Eric Fetty, Kevin Gausman. Both pitchers have good results this year. Decent numbers, not necessarily like driving big-time wins for their clubs. Could be the under, but I want to preview UFC 306 tomorrow night. Nice. And we'll do so with a main event bet, O'Malley versus Dvalishvili, Grasso, Shevchenko. Again, you can watch the prelims on Sportsnet and buy the pay-per-view on Sportsnet Plus. But Aaron Bronstetter was on, 3 days ago? He's saying this is a stay away. I'm not staying away.
Wow, you're going against Bronny.
I'm not against Bronny. I'm just actually taking a stand on the main event, unlike our intrepid MMA reporter.
It might be for the best.
Aaron Bronstetter. I got O'Malley round one KO.
Cool.
Rob has been wobbled, has been in trouble in multiple first rounds. He has not fought anyone who hits like Sean O'Malley. If Sean O'Malley lands a punch in a similar fashion, I don't think Marab is surviving it. So I like O'Malley, round one KO, plus 650 this weekend.
In the sphere.
Let Aaron Bronstetter know.
All right. We'll send that one to Bronny. Those are our best bets for tonight and this weekend. Yeah, it's going to be a great one tomorrow. You can get that on Sportsnet Plus by the pay-per-view there and Sportsnet 360. Okay, so we're talking about some Calder look ahead because we're going to have Jason Bukala, Books, join us on the other side of the break. We're going to do his top five Calder candidates. We're also going to look at some of the new faces, prospects, both league-wide and Canadian teams. So some of the favorites is no surprise. Matvei Michkov is plus 350 to win the Calder. Macklin Celebrini, plus 400. And Logan Stankoven, plus 400. And then everything else is around 5 to 7 range. And then it drops to 24 to 1. So I went through and looked at the Calder Trophy over the past 10, 15 years.
And the history of the award.
Basically the person that's supposed to win it. You know, it's not usually Connor Bedard, Matty Beniers, Moritz Seider, Kirill Kaprizov, Cale Makar, Elias Pettersson, Matthew Barzal, Austin Matthews, Artemi Panarin, Aaron Ekblad. Like, these are all stars. Nathan McKinnon, Jonathan Huberdeau, Gabriel Landeskog, Jeff Skinner, Tyler Myers. So that's all the way down to 09.
You don't see Connor McDavid's name there, though.
Okay, so there's been one or two upsets.
No, I mean, he obviously was injured in his rookie season, affecting that. I think it's the most interesting. There's a lot of interesting awards, of course, but this one is just an absolute crapshoot. I mean, Michkov, not drafted this year, coming to the NHL earlier than expected. He's the favorite. How is he going to, like, he tried a Michigan spin at a development practice and torts. Like, how are they going to mesh? I have no idea, but I'm not laying it with Michkov right now because I just don't know what it's going to look like. Macklin Celebrini is the reigning number one pick. Logan Stankoven being third shortest odds. Feels like he's been in the league forever.
I kept betting him last year in the playoffs or at the end of the season.
He was like a big part of the Dallas Stars team.
I mean, he could still be eligible.
He'll put up numbers, but will people dock him for that? Because, yeah, he's played in big games already before. So we'll get to the bottom of this, but this seems wide open for me, and there's a bunch of goaltenders as well. I mean, Askarov's going to get his chance with the San Jose Sharks, and he's at a long price. We could see the same from Dustin Wolf with the Calgary Flames, who are rebuilding and might want to put their rookie goaltender, who's been around for a little while as well, into the fire. No pun intended. I just think it's an interesting award this year, and hopefully Jason Bukala can help us sort of make some good decisions here. But you're right. You can kind of pick it out. Like, Connor Bedard was probably minus money to win the Calder before last year. Matty Beniers, maybe in a lower class, Moritz Seider, but like big names have won this award. Generally, you have to turn into a superstar player if you're going to win this, and trying to pick out the future superstar here seems like a bit of a challenge.
I like Macklin Celebrini. I think this guy is going to be able to transition to NHL very easily. He's been training like a professional his whole life. We know about his dad working with the Golden State Warriors. He's going to be living with Joe Thornton. Mm-hmm. He's going to be living with Joe Thornton this year. Like, this guy is going to have his world just focused on hockey. He seems like...
You think Joe's only thinking about hockey?
No, I think that...
He's got other interests.
I think Macklin Celebrini is going to be like...
Yeah.
Eat, sleep, hockey, no other distractions. Okay. And I think that he's been raised in a way that this is like the pathway for him. So, plus 400... worth it for me. Maybe Bukala can convince me on the other side.
I might be on his teammate and Will Smith, who's got that extra year on him in terms of strength and development.
But you know how the voters want.
The Sharks could have three finalists.
They want Macklin Celebrini to be up on that stage.
Yeah, they might, but he's going to have to put up the numbers in order to get there. But we'll figure it out. We'll get to the bottom of it. Mm-hmm. Bukala, after the break.
Yeah, Buchla, and then we're going to finish up with Diana Matheson. That's all to come on the Fan Pregame.
Fresh views on everything in the National Football League. It's the Fan Checkdown with Matt Marchese and Donovan Bennett. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Pregame. SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan. In half an hour, you're going to hear Blue Jays baseball. Got the Cardinals in town against the Blue Jays starting at 7 o'clock on SportsNet and SportsNet 590, The Fan. It's going to be a good one. Spooky. I think it's the City Connect jerseys tonight as well.
They don't do it on the road, right? Because the best City Connect jerseys, and the Blue Jays have a good one. It belongs to St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh,
the Lou.
They're pretty sweet.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, that would be great if they just
be a great
wore
matchup.
Them tonight.
Let's see them both.
Yeah. I'm happy the Blue Jays got their City Connect jersey this year because they were one of the only three or four teams that didn't have one.
And they threw a banging party.
And they threw a great party that we're still recovering from. We're going to talk to Jason Buchla of Sportsnet in a few moments here. And then we're going to wrap up our show with Diana Matheson, who's obviously been working on the Northern Super League, the Canadian Women's Professional Soccer League.
Mm-hmm.
Some news for us. We'll get to the bottom of that. Let's bring in Books, though. Booksy, how's it going?
Oh. Well, listen, guys. How was your summer? Fantastic?
Yeah, it looked like yours is pretty
good.
You just get off the course.
Look like you came back from Ibiza.
Ibiza would be nice. Ibiza would be nice, I have to say. Listen, you know how those students start moving into the dorms and all that kind of stuff at this time of year? I feel like I was traded right before training camp. My wife, Michelle, and I are in the middle of a move. We're downsizing and, right before hockey season. So this is my makeshift office with my makeshift attire.
You kept the right wardrobe, Booksy, I got to say.
I might or might not be going to a craft beer institution after this, to relieve myself of some stress. But anyways, I digress. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You know, Justin really likes helping people move, so he's willing to do it for free.
Well, when you have no skills, like that's all you can offer, right? All you can offer is grabbing the end of a Chesterfield.
Bench.
Chesterfield? They still have Chesterfields?
I think Buchla would have one.
My Nana's got a Chesterfield. They're still in rotation.
Okay.
Yeah, your Nana probably had one like my Baba with the plastic still on it because they wanted it to last forever, those things.
Well, I had a Baba too. What's what nationality is Baba for you?
Polish.
Oh, yeah. So mine's Bulgarian Baba. So Eastern Europeans, we share the Babas.
Yeah.
The best.
We share the Babas. But there's nothing like a Baba. A little pierogi action.
Oh, yeah.
Polish pancakes in the morning, all that good
stuff. She'll
knock
some sense into you.
You can share the Babas and you can share insight on this year's rookie class in the NHL. At least that we're hoping that, Jason. We wanted to kind of do like a top five Calder ranking, not necessarily set in stone, not looking at the odds. Just I want to know who's top of mind when we're talking about rookies. And I guess we should start with the Sharks because they might have the entire rookie class in terms of nominations for the Calder by the end of the season if Askarov gets to play as much as he wants to, and with Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini. So with the Sharks, obviously, they're in a rebuild stage. They're going to be focusing on their rookies. How good is this trio, though?
Real good, real good. And they've got some waiting in the wings, too, like Sam Dickinson right here playing for the London Knights. He's the next one, he's waiting on the on-deck circle, if you will, but you guys are absolutely right. You know, Askarov is going to be a long shot only because of the fact that the Sharks are not going to be very good. And, you know, he's going to have to put up something like a 925. And even if his goals against hovered around 3 with that type of save percentage, I'd say he'd be in the mix for sure. But the other two guys are going to be carrying a lot of the offensive load there for the Sharks right out of the blocks. And, you know, Macklin Celebrini, obviously, he's got tons of momentum. He's the next elite franchise player. But Will Smith was absolutely ridiculous 2 years ago at the U.S. National Team Development Program. I think he ended up with 71 points last year as a freshman in the college ranks. So it's a basket of riches there. But those three guys would definitely be in the mix, preseason conversation at the very least. And I guess we should go to Philly too, right? Like we should probably talk about Mitchkov a little bit, you know.
Yeah, he's the favorite, which, you know, obviously a different route, but should he be the favorite?
So not in my books. And the only reason I'm telling you is I read what you guys read. I know all this stuff. But listen, he was loaned out from Scott to Sochi for whatever the reasons are in Russia, it's hard to keep up with, you know, the Joneses over there. So he went over to Sochi for the second year in a row, had a fantastic offensive season. But boy, oh boy, did I see some mood in his game defensively and off the puck in the second half of the year. You know how we see some of these guys? We had Alexei Kovalev in Florida at the end of his career. I believe Alexei Kovalev could have been like Meryl Lemieux good. I know that's a crazy statement. Maybe not that good. But you understand, like, he was so skilled, but so moody at the same time. Like, when he was in Montreal back in the day, he'd do something, it would take you out of your seat, and then you'd be wanting to throw your large beverage on the ice at him, too, because you're frustrated. So Mitchkov's got a little bit of that in him, and that's why, out of the blocks, he's not that guy for me. But, hey, prove it, kid.
What do you think the match, is it a match made in heaven with John Tortorella? Like, are they oil and water? Is it too early to know that? What's that going to look like?
Wow, put me on the hot seat with that question. I have no idea, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I think they're both going to pull on each other a little bit there and test each other's mettle. I mean, from above, you know, management's going to be telling Torts and his coaching staff what they're getting in the player. And he's been here all summer, for the most of the summer training. So he's probably been in the facility and getting to know people. But they'll test each other, absolutely. Now, the funny thing with that is, if you're putting up, you know, the type of offense that you should be putting up as a potential leading point producer for the Flyers going forward in their retool, if you will, I think a little bit of that noise goes by the wayside. Although, as we know, Torts, you know, he sometimes doesn't like that. So they need to score goals. He's going to be that guy. But it could be entertaining post-game press conferences once in a while. I'll put it that way.
I mean, you could be definitely leading the rookie class, best rookie, and by game 70, Tortorella just may have enough by the end of the season. I want to talk about the Outlaws. A couple guys that have interesting backstories heading into a rookie year, one being Cutter Gauthier, the other being Rutger McGroarty. Gauthier probably going to have the better rookie year, maybe more guaranteed to play. But between those two, or just in general, when you look at those two, who stands out? Who do you expect more from? And which move might be best in terms of what was unexpected, given where they were drafted?
So this is where I have to, as a scout, former director, I have to get over the bias. I really have a problem, and I think you guys might agree with this, and I think our listeners would agree too. Like, families pay a lot of money to go watch these athletes play in the National Hockey League. And if you're drafted to any team in the NHL, I think you should be, you know, proud and honored to become a member of the club. So I'm struggling to get over the whole thing that happened with McGroarty in Winnipeg. I really am. I believe that it's going to take me some time there. Having said that, this is a heck of a player. From the hash marks down to the offensive zone, the middle of the ice, he's got leverage, he's got weight. I don't think he can play the middle guys in the NHL out of the blocks. I think it's too much to track, like the 200 feet, you know, and check down low if that's their system. So that's a thing that I'm going to be kind of monitoring. Gauthier's different. Gauthier's quicker, faster. Now, Gauthier does have some moodiness to him as well. Like at the World Juniors last year, I think he ended up with 7-2 or something like that offensively. Like, you know, he scores goals. He's a big, big, strong guy. He can shoot it from the flank. He can get in the middle of the ice as well. You know, and these two guys have swagger. There's no absolutely no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Like, remember Gauthier at the Frozen Four? Mm-hmm. You know, calling out the opponents. We're here to win, and we're going to win, and yada yada. But these two are, it's a good news story for the league to have guys that make a little bit of noise before they come in. But for me, and it's not just because I'm Canadian, I have a real problem with players that don't want to play for the teams that draft them. So I'm pulling for the kid to do well. I'm not saying I'm not, but he's going to have a long leash of prove it for me.
Yeah, he's going to have a lot of attention on him too when you make a request to move out before you really even have moved in, like you right now in the middle of your moves. Okay, so I want to ask you about some of the Canadian teams, because everyone that we've mentioned, the top, you know, five odds here are playing for American teams, but Lane Hudson comes in for the next best, the Canadian there, and then Dustin Wolf with the Calgary Flames. So if you're looking across at the Canadian teams in the NHL, which one would you say has the best chance of having a really standout rookie?
Well, Lane Hudson is obviously an electric player. You know, are the Habs going to introduce him to a full 82-game schedule? Mm-hmm. He's going to put them in a position to make a really hard decision, I'll tell you that, because he's dynamic on the offensive blue line. He can quarterback a power play out of the box right now in the NHL. And, you know, he's going to have those – people are going to sleep on him because he's an undersized D. but he's a chihuahua. Like, this guy, he's at your ankles the whole time. Like, he defends with purpose, okay? So I think Lane Hudson's a fascinating name to watch. I've loved this kid. Pulled for him right out of the box a couple years ago. So that's a guy for sure. The Dustin Wolf one, that's interesting, isn't it? I was asked last week, you know, does Dustin Wolf need more time in the American League? My response to that is, what else can he do for this team in the American League? Like, he's been outstanding for the Calgary Flames and proven his worth at that level. Is it going to be hard for him? You bet it's going to be hard. Calgary's in transition there, but here's what you got to do. You got to take the good days with the bad. It's, you know, it's like Ask Rob in San Jose. There's going to be some great days. There's going to be some hiccups. You know, don't get too high. Don't get too low. And that's how I'm looking at it with Dustin Wolf. He's earned the opportunity in Calgary to win the net. And I think it's his to lose a training camp. That's my vote.
Interesting class of rookies in terms of goaltenders. If Wolf get the opportunity, if Askarov gets the opportunity, Wallstedt, it feels like he's been on this list forever. Will he finally get an opportunity? Some pretty good pedigree there between the three. A last one for you, and you can hit the brewery up. I think one of the most interesting deals of the entire offseason was Matthew Savoy coming over to the Edmonton Oilers. Again, like, this, he's taken, I think, ninth overall by the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres giving up on him, it seems like, early. Like, what went on there? Like, are the Oilers getting a gem here, or potentially someone who can have major impact around really good players? And what were the Sabres thinking moving on from a prospect and getting someone who's serviceable, but definitely a third liner in Ryan McLeod?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. He's a bottom six guy, right? Maybe a middle six guy, Ryan McLeod. He's that energy guy, can kill penalties, play fast, all those types of things. I think the Sabres feel an enormous amount of pressure, and so they should. I mean, it's time, right? Like, we talk about this every September, don't we? And I think they feel an enormous amount of pressure that they've got to ice a team that's going to have better balance. And the sacrifice here is Savoy. And Savoy coming over to the Oilers, this is sneaky good for the Oil. I mean, they're great right now. But let's just start to say that some guys start aging out, or they get too expensive going forward, which, you know, I know the cap's going up, but they're going to have to spend some big money on McDavid, et cetera. Matthew Savoy has been one of the most electric players in the WHL for the last couple of years. He was outstanding last year in Moose Jaw. Undersized guy. The one thing I would say, Justin, is maybe the Sabres pick one undersized guy over another because they've got a few guys in their system that fit that mold. Mm. And sometimes, as we've talked about in Toronto, you know, we kind of got caught behind the eight ball, didn't we, with the same sort of player all the time? And maybe that was one of the choices that they made. But nice pickup for Edmonton in their cycle, because he's going to arrive, I don't think this year, obviously, but maybe next year.
Well, Books, we appreciate you coming on a Friday night. Go get yourself a Brucola.
I'm going for a Brucola. I love it.
Thanks.
Say hi to your Baba. I say hi to your Baba. My Baba's passed. I don't want to just.
So is mine. She made it to 99, though, so.
Oh, my.
They're watching, God. You know, they're cheering us on. So very sweet.
Okay, I'll leave you with this. I'm 53, and after this move, I'm going to feel like I'm 83. So I hope I get a chance to spend more time with you guys.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks, Jason. We'll see you soon.
See you guys.
Mr. Bukla, sportsnet analyst for us here.
You get like a Baba radar. You always find those with a Baba.
Yeah, I'm going to be a Baba one day. So
yeah,
I feel the Baba connection.
You? Automatic Baba? No conversation?
Well, actually, that's a good question.
People like are definitely like grandmothers are now
like if you're
definitely more
if you're
specific.
Nana, grandma, Baba,
what they
nana,
want to be called. There's a lot of options.
I had a Nana and a grandma and a Baba. So I'm going
to
just.
That's the thing. Everyone wants their own name. So if there's already a Baba, you might have to go a different route.
Yeah.
We're
deep in the Friday night chats
right
now.
We're generations still away from that. So yeah, we'll get there when we get
not
there.
Happening anytime soon, folks. That was good. Okay, so do you feel like easier that you could select a bet? He wasn't high on Matvei Michkov either.
Okay, so scratch off the favorite. We're already getting involved.
I'm telling you,
we didn't ask
400.
Him about Stankoven. I mean, he's already established.
Call him back up at the brewery.
Listen, I think it's going to be a scoring contest. Whoever puts their nose out in front, if you know, you're just going to have to track it. I think it's impossible to guess right now, but maybe we shouldn't, based on that conversation, rush out and bet the favorite because could be an interesting year for Michkov.
Okay. Yeah, we'll do some other awards look ahead over the next couple weeks, but yeah, we're getting close to hockey season happening. Favorite for the Hart Trophy, Connor McDavid +150. Like, then it goes to 500 for Nathan McKinnon, Art Ross, Connor McDavid minus money. You got Calder's got a little value, Vezina 600 for Connor Hellebuyck, and we'll go through. We already know Jack Adams is going to be Sheldon Keefe.
Yeah, we've
we already know that one.
We're building parlays around that as we speak.
Okay, let's finish up our Friday night with Diana Matheson, CEO of Project 8 and Olympic gold medalist. And how are you, Diana? We appreciate you jumping on here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You are a busy girl. Every time I look, you're pumping out content. You guys have a new announcements with the Northern Super League, and I'm trying to list it all out. Okay, so it's kicking off in spring 2025, right around the corner. You've got team announcements, stadium announcements, all this stuff going on. Like, how are you keeping your head on straight when you go through all of this on the other side of it for really the first time?
You know what? The great thing now is we've been hiring a lot of great people. We brought in our league president, Christina Litz, earlier in, oh gosh, I guess we announced her June, and she's been fantastic. I mean, she's the best leaders I've played for surround themselves with people smarter than them, and that's what I've been trying to do. And Christina Litz, with decades of experience in pro sports, been fantastic. She's been hiring a ton of great people at the league, so there's just way more hands on deck. So we're living the startup life, but it gets easier every day. So that's how I'm handling it. We've been bringing on great people. But yeah, wrapping up the Friday, I had a 6:40 a.m. and a 6:40 p.m.
Wow, so like bookends.
Yeah. There you go. That's a busy day. Okay, so what do fans need to know right now? Like, what is the latest in terms of your world, the startup world?
Oh, well, the big news out of yesterday, as of yesterday, Canadians can show their support. They can get first in line for season tickets by going to nsl.ca/tickets. And for $50, you can reserve a season ticket. Season tickets themselves are going to be coming out in a few weeks or months, but this is first come, first serve, first dibs to get first in line for a season ticket. And some of the teams have different promotions too. I know Vancouver's got some giveaways. I know Ottawa is giving the first 500 folks to sign up a signed game-worn jersey from next year. And yeah, and lots of news to come. We've got one more team, Montreal, that's going to announce its branding in the coming weeks. A few more, I think half our clubs still need to announce their coaches. A couple more stadium announcements. We'll have our on-field apparel provider announcement coming up. Championship game date, opening game date. Full season won't likely come out till January next year at earliest, because obviously we share venues and we have to wait for other schedules to come out. So full schedule won't be till later, but I promise there'll be lots of news, let alone players. Once we start signing players, that obviously will be announced on an ongoing basis till we kick off next year. So it should be lots to keep fans busy.
I know one thing that I don't know how much you guys have used, but the PWHL obviously going through kind of the similar process over the last year or two. They just announced names and they've had all this excitement around it. Like, being able to maybe share some of the movement of women's sports, obviously with a completely different sport, but with this being a Canadian thing that's going to be brand new. How much have you used the PWHL or thought about their processes and maybe learned from successes and failures when you've started the launch that you're doing?
Yeah, a ton. And I would say that's true of women's sport is a pretty great community. And I know I can pick up the phone to anyone in the PWHL, to WNBA Canada, to Teresa Reschner team at WNBA Toronto, any women's sport league, soccer league around the world. I can pick up the phone and say, hey, I need this information or this document. What did you do in this situation? And they'll just say, how can I help? What information can I give you? So it's everyone gets that a rising tide raises all boats, and it's a fun time to be in the industry. So learned a ton from them. They're honestly inspirational. We've got, you know, we've had a 2-year runway where we're trying to build this, and we felt that was as fast as we could do it the way we're building. The models are a little different. They're single entity. They've got one investor at the top. We sold franchises. So we've got club owners across the country. So a little bit different business model. But on the hard days where we feel like we're sprinting towards next year, I say, guys, remember, PWHL did this all in 6 months. So crazy. Anything's possible, and perfection is the enemy of getting it done. So
yeah, it's got to give you confidence, right? It's got to give you confidence given how much of a success it is at the PWHL and the other leagues, of course, that you're drawing inspiration from. I mean, you know, women's sports has obviously taken big steps in the last 5 to 10 years, partly because, hey, there's leagues. But where have you seen, because you know the competition, you've been in the competition, that it's been high quality, it's been high quality for a long time. But when you look at how women's sports has evolved, how it's viewed, what's like the starkest thing that sticks out to you?
Oh, it's not one thing. It's just how much it has shifted and shifted quickly. To drastically oversimplify it, probably my view is very much women's pro sports only been treated like a real business in the last 5 years, period. The WNBA was ahead. We've had previous leagues of different things, but real investment, a real commercial model, has only started in the last 5 years, truly. And you can see the growth already. And part of the issue we had in the past in women's sport was it did have a lot of myths and biases. And, you know, you could say no one watched women's sport. Women's sport didn't make money. You didn't see it anywhere. It wasn't on TV. And that made it hard because there was no professional environments, obviously, for players to play in that fans could see week in, week out. There was nowhere to build investment, build value. And that's shifted so quickly. And what's happened is a lot of data comes out of that too. And you see that there's numbers there, and it makes it easier to disprove some of the myths and biases that have been around. And you can say, well, here's what happens to viewership when you put it on broadcast television. Here's what happens to attendance when you market it. Here's what happens to franchise value when you buy in for $150,000 into the NWSL in 2013. And now your franchise is valued $75 million. So there's, it's harder to have biases against things when numbers are there, and that's been so helpful. But it's treated like a business now, period. And it's a growth industry, and it's got its foot in the ground now, and it's just going to keep growing over the next decades, truly.
Obviously, you wouldn't want it any other way, but like you entering this space, there's a bar you have to clear now, right? Because there's so much success in other sports. Is again, wouldn't change it for the world, but daunting at all, that part of it?
No, wouldn't change it for the world. PWHL success, them specifically, has been a huge boost to us in this market. Because again, there's more metrics we get to show. We get to show more audience numbers, more viewership numbers, where obviously what we're selling is all hypothetical and they were all hypothetical. But now that they've been a success, we've got more numbers to work from. Same with the NWSL, like everything in their progress, the Women's Super League in England, everything they move forward just brings the whole landscape with it. I mean, the people that don't get it still don't get it. And there's a whole segment of people that will not believe it will work until it works. And there's still the type of people that I will get saying, they were the same people before PWHL dropped a puck that would say, women's pro hockey will never work. But then as soon as they dropped a puck, they said, well, of course, women's pro hockey was always going to work, but women's pro soccer isn't going to work. But it's, you know, those aren't the ones that are going to probably be buying the preseason ticket deposits. And there's enough of other folks we will, and they'll get on the bandwagon later.
And we'll keep proving them wrong. We appreciate you jumping on. I know, long day for you, 12 hours in between your hits, but we can make sure everyone knows starting today, the $50 seat deposit for fans across the country then get their inaugural season of NSL season ticket holder. I am a season ticket holder of the PWHL, and that was the best thing I ever did because couldn't get tickets any other way. And I renewed it for my second season, so I will be now purchasing another season ticket because, you know what, I think it's really nice to invest in and also helps when you need to get tickets and nobody can get them. So I will be doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Toronto, get in early. We have, I mean, venues is an issue for PWHL and definitely for soccer. There's such a shortage of soccer specific infrastructure. So we have very large varying size of stadium. But Toronto at York Lions means what? There's only 5,000-6,000 tickets to sell there. So I would imagine in Toronto, those are going to be hard to come by, but next year would be my guess.
There you go. There you go. Well, enjoy your weekend. Thanks so much for jumping on, Diana, and we'll chat soon. Best of luck with everything.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Diana Matheson, CEO of Project 8 and the NSL.
Better send that transfer tonight.
Gotta get on it right now before the show ends, before our listeners all get them. But yeah, Northern Super League ticket launched for season tickets for the inaugural season. I mean, as I said, I did that with the PWHL, and I didn't realize how important that would have been because now I
You didn't realize you were entering a money-making scheme where you could have just...
It was cutthroat.
Yeah.
Like, I had people being like, please, I need your ticket. And when I wouldn't be able to come to a game, like, let's say we had a Leafs game that night, it was... I had this group chat, and I said, one ticket available, and it was like, you throw bait in the water, and sharks are coming at it, and it was just... crazy. So, and even this year, now since I was a season ticket holder in year one, I got early access to be a season ticket holder in year two. So, re-upped that.
Was there a little bump in price? Because
yes,
there could have been.
There was also, but it's moving to Coca-Cola Coliseum.
Explain to me.
The seats are there's more seats, but I think we're in a better section.
If you know, don't let the third party like the PWHL should be like the whatever the value of these seats are should be going to the league that's how it works.
So get on it, folks.
It should work.
As Diana said there, it was the NS NFL.com. I just want to make sure I got that right. But yes, we are excited to be fans of those. Not NSL.com. Is it NSL.ca?
Well, you have the same. Oh, we can figure that out. You Google search. You
use it is NSL.ca.
The same divide between Toronto and Montreal when it comes to soccer, or will you?
I think I'll just be a fan of the game.
Oh, you're not picking a team?
Not yet. I want to see who's on the team first. There's no players.
How will you approach that with the PWHL this year?
Victoire?
Scepters?
I might have to get a split jersey.
Okay. You're still on that bandwagon.
I am. Anyway, that was fun, folks. Happy Friday the 13th. Be safe out there and have a nice weekend. Justin and I will be back on Monday.
Avoid the Black Cats.
Yeah.
I will not be here on Monday.
Oh, yeah, you won't be. See you Tuesday.